In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So, Jeff Carlin, here we are with the Christmas edition of the Chicago Way. What Christmas gifts do you want from Santa?
Well, peace on earth is always on the top of my list, but after okay. I get past that, yeah, I know. Yeah. But, I don't really need anything in my life that isn't, you know, I'm people laugh when you try to be altruistic, you know, they think, oh, you're just putting us on, but really I don't want for anything. I'm happy with my existence and status in life, and I enjoy what I do very much. So really, I think just to be able to keep doing what I do, I'd be heartbroken if I wasn't able to do this.
I think that, you don't need anything except to make a few more pies. You
yes.
need time to make pies,
this is true.
Jeff.
A bigger like oven. Okay, there you go.
You need a bigger oven, not that easy bake oven that you're using. And also, you know, just like I need a bigger stock pot.
Right.
Now that the family is revolted against me, rebelled. One thing we do need is an understanding of what you just said. Who needs anything, really? Do you really want stuff?
No.
Right? You've got Christine, your family, your cats, including Tyrion the cat.
Tyrion the half cat.
I've got the Betty and the boys, my mom, my brothers. We're all together this Christmas. No vacation. I wanted to go on vacation, but then I thought, what I really want is to spend time with them. And we've got everybody listening. You know, Jeff and I stay up awake all night thinking about you guys.
Yeah.
Right? And I just, right? So we have them to thank, all you listeners out there. And what else do we have to thank?
I would be thankful for the never dull news cycle. I'll be thankful for that for sure.
Oh, my gosh, right?
I mean, it's just never. And one thing I would hope and wish for next year is less suffering in the world and less violence in the city and less
of course,
because it's awful.
But there's other things that are going to happen this year as we move forward. There'll be goodness
mm-hmm.
and kindness, and we shouldn't forget that. And there also could be gubernatorial butt cracks.
There sure could be.
Because I can't wait for the commercial, I don't know who's going to do it, of J.B. Pritzker running for governor and the four plumbers pulling out the toilets in the mansion he bought next to his other mansion so he could make it inhabitable and, you know,
reduce
get a
his tax rate. Yeah.
And I just can't wait to see the butt crack commercial. Is it wrong? To want to see an animated one.
Right, of course, right.
I don't want real flesh and
right.
hairy lower backs or
satirically
plumber tramp stamps. I don't want to see that because plumbers don't do that. We're also going to have Tom Bevan is going to join us in a bit. And you know the thing about Tom Bevan? Real Clear Politics founder, friend of mine, runs a site that you have to go to every day. I mean, everybody in my business goes to this site every day. He runs commentary from the left, the center, and the right. But his thumbs are different now, Jeff Carlin.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Carlin, Tom Bevan's thumbs on Twitter are now the thumbs of thunder. Thunder thumb. Tom Bevan. Of Real Clear Politics. Tom, your thumbs have been on fire. What's with your Twitter thumbs lately?
You know, when I update the site, I go to, you know, just tons of different
newspapers across the country, and I often find some of the most interesting stories are the ones that are not in the Washington Post or the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. They're in these mid-market papers, and you know, oftentimes in presidential states or you know, down in Florida or out in California, stuff that I find interesting, and so I tweet about it. And obviously, the news that Bill de Blasio is back in Iowa. I think he's been there before, and he's, you know, giving a speech to Democrats out there telling them that they need to run these progressive populist campaigns. And then, of course, he's asked, well, are you interested in, you know, are you going to be running? And he said no. And he said, I can walk and chew gum at the same time. And as if to demonstrate that, he pulled out a pack of gum and popped one in his mouth and walked out the door for, when he was talking to the editorial board of the Des Moines Register.
You know, so. Tom, politics has become so bleeping ridiculous, I don't even know anymore. Really, I can't. I see on your RealClearPolitics.com, lest anyone think that you let your any prejudices get in the way. You've got a smattering of a cross section of commentary from left to right. People questioning whether Trump's sanity, whether he'll survive the year, whether he'll destroy the Republican Party, and vice versa. What will the Democrats do? It just goes on and on. But what is the state? You study the media, so what is the state of things now?
It's bad, getting worse. And we do try to provide a cross-section of opinion, right? What the center-left is thinking, center-right, far-left, far-right. You know, and it's for the discussion around this tax bill in particular, John, has been just outrageous. I mean, Vox had a piece, you know, Donald Trump has sold out America. You have Nancy Pelosi on the floor, the House, saying this is the worst bill that's ever come before the House. You have, commentary calling Donald Trump a lawless president. I mean, and we heard this, you know, it seems like every single issue now, the net neutrality, right? It's the end of the internet as we know it, according to critics, right? Folks on the left, mostly. This was a law that was implemented in 2015. It's only been on the books for 2 years. And so to repeal, like, you know, the internet flourished before this law was passed or this regulation was passed. And so repealing it somehow the end of life as we know it, and the internet will never be free. And it's a giveaway. I mean, the rhetoric now is so overheated and so hyperbolic that I think people just end up dismissing him. I mean, when you hear Democrats arguing that this tax bill is going to kill thousands and, you know, thousands of people, I think people dismiss it because it's too much.
It does become too much, and the whole year has been too much. So I would ask you, Mr. Bevin of Real Clear Politics, recap the year for us, please, so that I don't have to do it. Recap the year in politics nationally, but we're also going to, you know, people should know that even though you are clearly one of those people who influence the media elites by your website, that you live in the Midwest here in near Chicago, and that you've been a Chicagoan for quite some time. So before we get into the local, tell us what happened. Tell the space
five stories here.
The space traveler just
top
came.
Five stories. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I mean, look, this has been the year of Donald Trump, unquestionably. I mean, every single story has been revolved around Donald Trump and the investigation, you know, his starting with his inauguration, moving into the Russia probe. So it's been the year of Donald Trump. I think what we also saw most recently here in the second half of the year, the other big story, and this one's been well reported, is the Me Too movement, right? This sexual harassment, starting with Harvey Weinstein, starting perhaps even before that, but certainly culminating with the exposés of Harvey Weinstein, and now has gotten to a point where you know, there's a backlash brewing. There's now a discussion about whether this is going too far and what are the parameters. You know, generally, I think people think it's a good thing when women speak out when they've suffered, you know, sexual abuse, sexual assault, rape, obviously. But, you know, Matt Damon tried to say the other day that, you know, well, let's try and differentiate between, you know, grabbing a butt or patting someone on the butt and, you know, rape. And he was, you know, he took it on the chin in the media because a lot of folks are saying that, you know, these are all part of the same system and therefore you can't condemn one without condemning the other. And so I think that's the other, I mean, those are the two big stories that popped to mind, obviously, and those aren't earth shattering by any stretch, but I'd add a third one from a political standpoint, and it has been the ongoing schism within the Republican Party, between the sort of Trump wing and the establishment wing. And then even the anti-Trump movement, which has, you know, I think really struggled, is struggling, especially now as we come to the end of the year and people are looking back and thinking, despite all the Sturm und Drang of the year, you know, Trump managed to do a decent amount of stuff, repealing regulations, you know, Gorsuch, now tax reform. I mean, there's a lot of stuff they didn't get done, but, you know, he's had a pretty good last few weeks in terms of getting stuff done. And so that's the other story that really, that if I had to pick a third big story, that would be it.
Hey, Tom, a question for you on the Me Too movement. It's kind of floating around there, the idea that if the, you know, Wayback Machine, things are reversed and Miss Hillary Rodham Clinton becomes president, this movement probably doesn't feel like it comes out like it did because it doesn't happen like it did, because people would have been, placated with the fact, well, you know, we got a woman president and now, you know, women, hooray women, and then it would have kind of ended. And a lot of people are under the idea that because the president is who he is, that fervor was still building. And when he, after the election, there were all the marches and there was this groundswell of female empowerment. What is your take on that?
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I mean, even now, the Bill Clinton, the legacy of Bill Clinton with regard to this Me Too movement and the sexual harassment thing hangs over the head of Democrats, including Kirsten Gillibrand, who is, you know, now presenting herself and has been, in fairness to her, for some time, a champion of women who've suffered sexual assault and abuse. But at the same time, she was, you know, a patron of the Clintons, and gladly so.
She loved them.
Hillary Clinton's campaign. Absolutely.
She
Are you kidding
loved
me?
Them.
Loved them. Loved them with a capital L, and suddenly Bill Clinton should have resigned, and, you know, now Franken's got to go. I mean, it's just, so I do think it would be a different conversation that would be happening, and perhaps in some ways a much more uncomfortable one for Democrats.
How about
if Hillary
no.
Clinton was president?
How about no conversation? How about Jeff Carlin and Tom Bevin? If Hillary had been president of the United States, there wouldn't be a reconsideration of Bill, because that would mean that the feminists who were trying to break away and build a anti-Trump movement out of the Me Too wouldn't even need to do that, number one. Number two, they wouldn't dare, because Hillary would have their heads, either their tongues or their Twitter thumbs, on a pike.
So that assumes, John, that the story about Harvey Weinstein, which really broke this whole thing open, would never have been published by the New York Times. And you could argue that is a possibility, because certainly if, you know, because Hillary Clinton was sort of abandoned by the power structure and Harvey Weinstein had sort of less power than he had before, he was perhaps ripe for pickings. And certainly there are examples of, you know, the New York Times and the New Yorker trying to track down these rumors that have been floating around about him and weren't able to get anybody to go on the record. So maybe they wouldn't have been able to break that story the way that they did. But once that story broke, you know, I mean, it's really that's when the dam broke and this whole discussion started. And, you know, if you believe that story would have broken under Hillary Clinton, a Hillary Clinton presidency, then there would have had to have been some discussion about it.
There would have been a discussion, and I did not say that the story would not have broken if Madam Hillary had been president of the world. But what I tell you is that I don't think we'd have the parallel construction of the Me Too movement morphing into a political anti-Trump thing. Well, because Trump wouldn't be president, but also calling into question Bill Clinton's sins would have been an affront to the president, Hillary Clinton. And you know what Madeleine Albright said? That the hell has a special place for such women. And I just think, right? I just never forget that. It's like listening to her say that again and again on the loop in my mind is like walking across an icy river with no waders. But so I don't think that would happen. But clearly now, the Me Too movement, the sexual harassment thing, seems to all be directed, and why Matt Damon was beaten up so badly, because you cannot get in the way of this spear. This is a pointed spear aimed at Donald Trump for 2018. And so therefore...
Well, I think that... sure, I think that's right, and Democrats have certainly... That's been part and parcel of the strategy that they've been employing here for the past few weeks, jettisoning Al Franken, and John Conyers and all of that, because they do want to be able to use that as a weapon against Republicans and certainly and Trump in 2018 and 2020. And that's why I think Republicans were generally relieved that Roy Moore lost that race, at least a lot of them were, because that took away one of the weapons that Democrats were prepared to bludgeon them with for the better part of the, next year.
Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics, who shows up on all sorts of television programs to opining, and also has his own show on a station that once graced me with its favor, WLS, in the afternoons, and I've been on it. And I need to ask you now, Tom, predictions. I'm trying to do my John McLaughlin. My dear Bevin, predictions. What will happen?
Look into the stars and tell me what you see, Tom Bevin, go.
Yeah, right. Listen, this is an awful time to be in the prediction business with regard to anything generally, but politics in particular. I mean, it's just so, because there's so much, turbulence within both parties and what's going on. I mean, I predict more of the same. How's that? Hair on fire stories from the media, Donald Trump tweeting, gnashing of teeth, the absolute, constant bloodletting on Twitter. And here's a prediction for you, John. You'll like this one. I predict Rosie O'Donnell will be indicted for bribery for trying to, if you saw this tweet of hers last, just the other day, offering $2 million to Senator Susan Collins and Senator Jeff Flake for voting against the tax bill, to try and scuttle the tax bill. And she said, DM me, I'm totally serious, $2 million each. And of course, people were quick to point out that this is, of course, a crime. It is illegal to try and bribe a senator. She did it publicly.
She should be indicted.
She should be charged with, with attempted bribery. Absolutely. If you believe this is a country of laws. And oh, what fun that would be. So that's what you have to look forward to in 2018.
If you think this is a country of laws and not men, you're sadly mistaken, Mr. Bevin. Because
right.
Now we see that your predictions, we will seek them for the FBI investigation. Does Robert Mueller, who the sainted man that he is and walks on water, blesses tiny animals and so forth, is he going to turn any of this stuff against his own the FBI for this rather remarkable display of bias and conflict of interest in their own investigation?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely an area where the crystal ball is cloudy as to what happens with this investigation. I mean, I think the revelations of the last 2 or 3 weeks have seriously undermined and certainly reinforced the perceptions of Trump supporters that this is just a witch hunt and it's being conducted not in an ethical or unbiased manner. You have Democrats saying this is all just a Republican plot to discredit Mueller and his team. And, you know, you had Chuck Schumer on the floor of the Senate the other day saying that, you know, he's unimpeachable. Robert Mueller is just unimpeachable. And so.
Yeah, but Andy McCabe spent 7 hours in closed session testifying. And I don't like the closed session thing. I must say, the closed session thing bothers me. I don't understand why it has to be closed. The public needs to have confidence in its institutions. And just because the left likes ripping Trump and destroying the presidency doesn't mean that there are other institutions may be worth saving. And I think, I don't know how the public can have confidence when you see all this stuff that came out.
Well, I agree. I mean, I agree. I would love to see all this stuff done in open session, and so we could watch it and evaluate on our own terms whether we think these people who are testifying are credible or not credible. You know, but the problem too is that these hearings turn into just grandstanding sessions by lawmakers themselves, where they just give speeches that are obviously have partisan motivations. And so you spend a lot of time and you don't necessarily get the kind of clarity that you want from that stuff. But generally speaking, I agree. And I think the FBI and the DOJ have taken a huge hit this year. I mean, we actually thought, cynical, naive people that we were, that the people who were career officers at the Department of Justice and FBI and some of these other institutions were, you know, put country and duty ahead of partisanship, and that they would conduct these investigations with. And, you know, it's astonishing to me that you have a guy of Bob Mueller's status who would recognize the sensitivity of the investigation, that he would not go out of his way to be overly sensitive to and select people that were as much as possible beyond reproach, right? Folks who didn't donate to Hillary Clinton and the Democrats, folks who didn't have, you know, weren't sending texts to their lovers about what an idiot and awful person Donald Trump is. I mean, and we've found out that that has not been the case. We were just talking about this the other day with regard to the GSA and these emails that the Trump transition team basically says now were taken illegally. Robert Mueller's team didn't have to do that way. They could have asked the Trump transition team for them, and they could have, you know, done it in a way that would have been credible. And instead, it seems like they sort of went back door to the GSA and scooped up as much stuff as they could and have used that to fuel the investigation. And it seems like it's, you know, at best, it's unethical.
At worst, it's
a little bit shady, but that's how they roll. And that's unfortunate because I think they're paying a price for it.
Before I know Jeff wants to get in here, but I need to ask a question here. The what bothers me personally is that I'm really not a big Trump fan. But I'm really not a big liberal Democrat, one world government fan as well, because I see what happens in Venezuela, and I'm waiting for Americans to understand that sometimes doesn't work. In the meantime, though, I don't want to believe in a deep state. I don't even want to think about it. I hear it on some of the more rabid talk shows, deep state this, deep state that, and I tend to stay away from broadcast, listening or reading mostly Real Clear Politics, the Chicago Tribune, the Wall Street Journal's editorial page, like most people of good sense, and National Review, and of course a smattering of The Nation, just for fun, and Salon when I want to hear adolescent whining. But the question remains, when those text messages came out with respect to let's have an insurance plan, let's meet with Andy McCabe before Trump gets elected to make sure, ostensibly, that he won't succeed in the federal government, that's terrifying to me, because that means if it's okay for the Democrats who are, and particularly my liberal colleagues everywhere in the media, who think it's okay to do this, then it would it be okay if conservatives get a hold of the apparatus and do the same thing to an incoming Democrat?
I think it goes deeper than that, John. Even in on a personal level, you have these agents and these personnel, whoever they are, whatever you know jurisdiction they're under, they feel that what they're doing is best for the country because Donald Trump shouldn't be in power. So no matter what I do, as long as it's taking him down, it's best for the country.
Well, sort of like the editors who allow commentary about is Trump insane?
Exactly. Right? And it's that mentality that you're the judge and jury that doesn't. It's terrible.
So
it's
brings
terrifying.
Us back to the are we a nation of laws or men? It looks like we're a nation of men now, Tom Bevin. And what happens to a republic that operates in that fashion?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think the veil has been lifted a little bit, and not in a good way, on the sort of machinations of and motivations of some of these folks inside the government who as Jeff mentions, I mean, are doing things that are. It's almost like a form of vigilantism, right? And the ends justify the means, and we're going to do whatever we can to try and make sure that, at this point, it's undoing the will of the people. And I think that's the thing that Democrats have really struggled with over time, right? Trump didn't win the popular vote, but he did win enough votes in states that mattered to become president, and they've never accepted it. And once you go down that road, then you really do adopt the mentality that this is an illegitimate president who needs to be removed as soon as possible by any means necessary. And so that's how you end up. I mean, even beforehand, the idea that the government, and we will eventually find this out, but the idea that the FBI perhaps use this phony document this dossier that was created by the Democratic operatives at Fusion GPS and the Hillary Clinton campaign to go get a FISA warrant to spy on Donald Trump's transition folks, Carter Page and the like. That is absolutely terrifying. If that's in fact what happens, and there's probably a pretty good chance that that's how it's going to play out.
It's like a Chicago setup.
All this stuff is deeply disturbing. And, I'm not sure how that gets fixed, how we repair the damage that's been done to these institutions. Trump's going to be, he'll move on. He's going to be, in 3 years or 7 years or whatever it's going to be, Trump will no longer be in office. But the public trust for some of these institutions, is going to last a lot longer. The damage is going to last a lot longer.
I have a prediction for you, Tom, for next year. A candidate who ran in the 2016 election is going to be charged with a crime of colluding with Russians, and it's going to be Jill Stein.
Jill Stein. There you go. Yeah, I saw that headline, and it seems fairly interesting that could happen.
Well,
who knows? Hillary Clinton might be charged with colluding with Russia if we learn more and more about what was going on behind the scenes with some of this Fusion GPS stuff.
Tom, 30 years ago or more than that now, Betty and I thought about going to Moscow for our honeymoon, but we decided to go to the Virgin Islands instead. I just don't understand Moscow. Okay, last thing now, I need to know locally, because people ask you about your national views. What about locally? Okay, can Governor Bruce Rauner dig himself out of this hole, number one? If he loses, which I think he might, will an election with Jeanne Ives become a nationalized election in Illinois against J.B. Pritzker, the plumber's helper?
Plumber's helper.
Well, because of the butt cracks in the commercials that are going to be unveiled eventually.
I am astonished by Bruce Rauner's political incompetence. I mean, the guy just is the way that he's been conducting himself for the last couple of weeks. First, he said, you know, I'm not in charge, you know, whining about Mike Madigan, which, of course, he's right on the merits of Madigan's the kingmaker and control thing. But, you know, for Rauner to say, oh, I'm not in charge, and it's, you know, oh, woe is me. And then he says, I think yesterday to the Trib editorial board that, you know, he's got messaging problems because these are complex issues and you just can't explain them to 12.5 million people. Obviously implying that voters are too stupid to understand, instead of, you know, looking in the mirror and saying, coming up with something that he can, an accomplishment, a vision that he can sell to voters that in a way that makes it easily accessible to them. He has to fall back. And I used to hate it when Barack Obama would do that all the time. People would ask him what his problem was. Why isn't this healthcare, you know, plan popular? You've given 86 speeches on it in the last 6 months. Why does the public still not like it? And he would say, well, it's just, you know, it's the messaging. It's not the policy, of course, you know. Right. It's just, you know, our messaging is not good enough, and we need to do a better job. It's the same thing Republicans are now saying with respect to, you know, this tax plan. They've absolutely gotten their brains beat out. But you can't turn around and say that's because voters are too stupid, and that's what Rauner's doing. So I think he might lose. I mean, I find him to be, politically incompetent. I know he's got tons of cash, but he has made some serious mistakes, and I would not be shocked at all if he ended up losing this primary.
And then would it be a nationalized election? Gene Ives, the conservative, against you know, big money Democrat.
Well, I mean, it's going to be a nationalized election anyway. I mean, if you look at I go to CNN.com, I think it's CNN, one of, you know, every morning, and the first thing I get is an autoplay ad of J.B. Pritzker, you know, of his, and it's Donald Trump. I mean, he doesn't even mention Bruce Rauner. It's all about Donald Trump.
Same with Ron.
Yeah, exactly.
They run against
Trump.
Going
on national television. Absolutely.
Right.
And that's a popular position in a blue state when you're, you know, trying to fire up your blue state base. And so that's going to be, regardless of who he's running against, that's going to be the plan for JB, assuming he wins his primary. But whatever the Democrat is, it'll be a nationalized race around, you know, Donald Trump. But the question is whether that's going to sell or not. And I suspect it might.
It's Tom Bevin. He is Tom Bevin of the furious Twitter thumbs lately, and also the
thumbs of fury.
I'm saying the thumbs of fury are just, you've just turned it up. Okay, you know that, right? You've been going. You know this, right? With the Blasio thing of Real Clear Politics, and our friend, and Merry Christmas, Tom, to you and your family from Jeff Carlin and me and all the listeners of the Chicago Way.
All right. Thanks, guys. Merry Christmas to you, too.
See you, buddy.
All right.
This is a column that I wrote years ago. I thought it would only run once, and I've been rewriting it ever since. I don't just reprint it. I write every word so I don't forget what it's all about. The Christmas Gift, A Night of New Hope. For all the children who should be loved always, but especially on this special night, with our arms around them and a long goodnight kiss on the temple, a kiss more precious than anything wrapped in a box. And for all the parents lingering in the doorways, watching those sleeping shapes, whispering silent prayer. For every child who grows up with a hard crust around his heart because someone neglected to plant those kisses and give those hugs. And for those who adopt a child, for all the frightened young women who gave up their babies for adoption and saved those precious lives. For anyone who's lost a child, for the children who have lost their moms and dads, and for all those who've tried to have children and yet are unable. For all the crazy uncles who'll drink too much tonight and then sneak outside to put on that red suit and rush back in to surprise the kids. And for the wise aunts who make strong coffee so the crazy uncles may sober up. For the members of all the choirs of the world who've been practicing in cold, empty churches, and for their harmonies that invite us to humble ourselves so that we may begin scraping away any bitterness that has taken root. For friends and relatives who don't wait for a special holiday to build a family, they show up at your door with a coffee cake on some random Saturday morning in April or on a cold November afternoon, dropping by just to see if you're okay. So tonight is for them, and tomorrow too, because they are family, by friendship, by blood, by the acts of family. For those of you who've kept your sense of humor, for those who are patient and kind, and for the shy ones at work who don't mix with the ruling clique of the office, yet who would stun us with their grace and talent if only given half of a chance. And for all those who are far away and cannot make it home. For those who know they've made bad choices and hope to repair what's been broken. For those who are lost and tired and so very distant, thinking that too much time has passed, that the hour is too late, and feeling they can never return. Remember, tonight is the night of new hope, and the door is always open. Just reach for it and see. For every old guy alone at the end of the bar tonight, nursing his drink, half watching TV, grateful for all the noise and light around him. And for the old women awake in their beds, alone, remembering nights past and the laughter of children when there was so much work to do and a houseful of hungry guests to feed. For every parent who is overwhelmed out of work or unemployed. For all these good people who refuse to let their children see their fear. And for their children who pretend not to see. For everyone who must work tomorrow and tonight, like our paramedics, police officers, and firefighters. For their families who wait for them to come home. For all the young who've been taken by violence this year in our brutalized cities. And for those of us who've become so numbed by the cruelty that we shrug it off and normalize the pain. For everyone who is in a hospital tonight, praying for dignity, relief, and a peaceful end without shame and suffering. For their physicians, and for those nurses who enter the room and pull up a chair to hear quiet confessions. For those in the clergy who have struggled with faith, yet find it again and are renewed. And for the sailors at sea and those standing watch on the bridge tonight, staring out into cold black water, remembering brightly lit rooms. For the members of the United States Armed Forces who protect us with their bodies and their lives. For the members of our foreign and intelligence services and their loved ones who wait and worry and can never, ever say why. For the American people who never quit, and for those who prize true liberty over the illusion of security. For the farmers who feed us, for the teachers who together with parents instill the love of learning in the young, and for those great books of the West that have yet not been forgotten. To those whom I've hurt with stupid and thoughtless words on bad days, I'm sorry. And to every one of you who gives this column a chance 4 days a week and who sends those letters and email that I share with my wife, we can't thank you enough. And for everyone who has kept their faith and refused to be shamed away from it, and for all of you who keep hold of what is truly most important about this night and tomorrow, it is that message brought to us by that perfect child born in a manger in Bethlehem so very long ago. He came to light the world. He is the gift, and it is all about love. And so I hope it comes to you and comforts you and remains with you always. And from all of us, to all of you and yours, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. So we're going to take a week off over Christmas. I want to thank Tom Bevan of Real Clear Politics and, as always, my good friend, Jeff Carlin, master pie maker, and WGN producer par excellence for being here with me once again, and you. And you too, because you listen to this podcast, and I can't thank you enough for doing so. This is John Cass of the Chicago Way. Thank you again for listening, and Merry Christmas.